Of course, we're getting through COVID-19 together, and that's having a significant impact on the economy, among many other things, and really causing some serious issues for a lot of folks' financial situations. Even before the pandemic hit, though, a large percentage of North Carolinians and Orange County residents were struggling to make ends meet, particularly families with kids. The organization NC Child has just released annual county data cards, which includes a lot of information from county to county about economic numbers, particularly when it comes to families with kids and what their situation is. A lot of these numbers are pre-COVID-19, so you know the situation has only gotten more significant and more urgent for a lot of families out there. Joined on the phone by Whitney Tucker, who is the lead author of the county data cards, also the acting policy director for NC Child. You can find out more about them at ncchild.org, by the way. Whitney, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to speak with you.
So before we get into the specific numbers, tell us a little bit about the project in general. What's the methodology behind it?
Sure. So our county data cards include 15 different measures of child well-being across 5 major domains. So we look at what we call a strong start that talks about infant health and the earliest stages of life for kids, then family economic security, nurturing homes and communities that gets at some of the indicators of child well-being that are bigger than their individual family, and then high quality education and also health and wellness. And so looking at a quick glance, you can see in a community about how well kids are doing across all of these areas, just to give an idea of where we might need to put some more effort into our advocacy.
And in my lead-in, I kind of focused on the economic side, but as you mentioned, a lot of numbers related to health and education and a number of other things, too. And as we'll talk about, some of those numbers are pretty significant and stark for Orange County in particular. But let's start by talking about the economic side of things. Your report focused on poverty and the number, the percentage of families with kids who are either living with poverty or just generally struggling to make ends meet. What did you find and what do we know about Orange County in particular?
So we found that before the pandemic struck, nearly half of children in North Carolina lived in a family that was struggling with poverty, right? So that was below 200% of the federal poverty line. So it means that they're in a home that is poor or low income. For a family of three, we're talking about, you know, about $45,000 a year, right? And so difficulty making basic needs payments like transportation, childcare, healthcare, that sort of thing. We know now that widespread job losses have really meant that more families are sliding into that dangerous territory. And that's really concerning because, you know, all kinds of traumatic events for kids come along with living in poverty. Things like potentially losing your home, a parent struggling with depression, and also it's been linked to increased risk of child abuse and neglect. Right? So in North Carolina overall, we have 28.2% of children living in poor or low-income homes. In North Carolina overall, we have 45.9%. In Orange County, we're looking at 28.2%. So doing significantly better than the statewide average for children living in poor and low-income households, but still an incredibly high percentage of kids who are living in households where basic needs may not be met or where it is a real struggle for families to even keep food on the table. And we know that COVID-19 is just going to continue stressing that.
And that's such a stark number because we know that Orange County is one of the most affluent counties in the state in terms of per capita income. 28% of families are living in or close to poverty in one of the most affluent counties in North Carolina. That's just incredible.
Absolutely. I think that poverty is something that people really don't see all the time because we imagine folks going without in these outward ways, right? Like we imagine families who are struggling to meet basic needs looking or behaving a certain way, but it's really so common in our state that you can't just put a finger on it and say, this is what a family struggling with poverty looks like anymore, right? This is a really widespread problem and we are able to attack it from multiple policy points and we should be doing more of that.
What about hunger in particular? Are you focused on the percentage of families that are struggling to make ends meet in terms of putting food on the table?
Yes, yeah, so 1 in 5 kids statewide lives in a household that's food insecure. And that metric comes from the USDA. And it's really about whether you have enough food for everyone in the household to be able to live a healthy, active life, right? So it's about nutrition, and it's about the amount of food, and it's about the access to that food. Right. And the USDA collects this information via a survey, and it's still a big problem, even in Orange County, where, as you already mentioned, there's an incredibly high per capita income compared to the statewide numbers. Right. So 15.5% of children in Orange County live in households that are food insecure. Even here, where so many families can afford it, we're seeing a struggle.
Speaking with Whitney Tucker again, ncchild.org, the website. We're talking about county data cards, so new numbers. They release these every year about the state of families with kids, both in Orange County and statewide. And we've been talking about the economic side of things. Let's turn to health and health care and health metrics. And we haven't really touched so much on this yet, but this is really going to come to the fore in these numbers, as well as others, that the disparities across the state are not just geographic, they're also demographic, and we see that specifically in Orange County too, right?
Absolutely. So with things like infant mortality, we know that a lot of the high rate that we see statewide and also in Orange County is driven by racial disparities in that outcome. So statewide, we have an infant mortality rate that is actually the lowest that it has been in decades, at 6.8 infant deaths per 1,000 live births, which I know can sound like a relatively small number, right? But think about every single infant life and what that means for a family, right? And so every time we lose a child, that is an incredible tragedy. And we are still above nationwide average at 6.8 deaths, right? But in Orange County, that figure is 6.2 infant deaths. And when you break it out by race, it is horrific. So there is an infant death rate of overall 6.2 for white infants, 4.4, for Black infants, 22.7.
Wow.
And so it is really stark, the difference that we're seeing in the way that this is affecting different communities and what it means about our healthcare system and who has access to quality care and who is, treated differently and given a different level of care, right? And we have to start being able to talk more about that.
How big is the disparity statewide?
Sure. So statewide, Black infants are just over 2 times as likely to die. So we have a white infant mortality rate of 5.5 and a Black infant mortality rate of 12.2.
Is that disparity growing? Is it changing at all?
So that disparity has been staying pretty steady at about 2 to 2.5% difference between Black and white infants for decades now. So even as we're seeing a decrease overall in the infant mortality rate statewide, we're seeing that this trench between the experiences of white North Carolinians and Black North Carolinians in infant birth is just, it's holding steady. And in some counties, it's actually been deepening.
That's such a bigger racial disparity in Orange County specifically versus statewide. Are you seeing that same difference in other metrics as well?
So no, and it's important to note that with infant mortality rates, that the population of the county does factor in here, right? So you can see a big change in an infant mortality rate from 1 year to the next, because the rate is calculated as the number of deaths divided by the number of live births and then multiplied by 1,000, right? So if there were relatively few live births or relatively few deaths, which often happens in smaller areas as well, then we tend to see bigger infant mortality rates. But the difference between the white death and the Black death rate still can't really be explained by that. And we don't see it showing up everywhere. Although Orange County has been struggling with some other health metrics that could really point to what's going on. So this year's county card showed that there has been a decrease in the number of women in Orange County who have been receiving early prenatal care, which is really important. They also showed that there has been an increase from 7.2% in 2017 to 8.6% in 2018 of babies who are born at a low birth weight. And also there's been an increase of babies born preterm And those things factor into the likelihood of an infant dying before its first year of life is over.
Speaking again with Whitney Tucker, NC Child, and I want to get to the policy implications of all of this, what we can do. But before we do, other numbers from the county data cards that stand out to you that folks ought to know about?
Sure. So I think that people should really keep an eye on third grade reading proficiency, especially post-COVID. In Orange County, you guys saw an improvement in this figure to about 52% of students statewide scoring proficient in reading, up from just about 49%, which is still a really troubling statistic. But as we move forward through COVID, I think it's going to be important to see how this changes based on the lack of early care, especially right now. We know from research that access to high-quality early education and pre-K is what really sets kids up for success in school and oftentimes in later in life writ large, but especially for third grade reading, because that's where you really develop the skills that you're going to need to read proficiently. And so I think we're likely to see this figure go down statewide, but you'll want to see how that tracks with the closures of child care centers in your area, and also from a policy level with what sort of supports are given to get those back open.
So let's go to policy. Again, speaking with Whitney Tucker, so all of these numbers are stark pre-COVID, and now that we're in the pandemic, we know that they're only going to be more troubling. What can we do about it? What are the policy recommendations on the state level, local level, governmental, non-governmental?
So the first thing we can do is expand Medicaid. We know from research that health coverage improves family financial stability because they don't have to go into excessive medical debt every time that they need additional care. We also know that when parents have health coverage, that kids are more likely to have health coverage and to use it. And when kids are able to go in for their well-child checks, they're able to stay on track and ensure that there aren't any developmental delays, and they're also more likely to receive the immunizations they need, which is going to be really important moving into a post-COVID world, so that we aren't trying to deal with the potential resurgence of COVID-19 at the same time as something like a measles or mumps outbreak. Another thing that we could really do is expand and extend poverty and hunger fighting programs like SNAP and WIC and TANF. COVID has really increased need sharply across the state. And we know from the county cards that a lot of families were really struggling with poverty and food insecurity even before the pandemic struck. And so these programs are going to be lifelines through the recovery period. So we need to be reaching out to state and local lawmakers and also federal ones and asking for additional funding and additional flexibility to keep those programs providing emergency benefits to families through our recovery period. And then finally, NC Child really encourages folks to call their elected officials and ask for additional investment in early education. As I mentioned, early care and quality early care are really the primary drivers of children's later success in school. And we don't want to move into a world where we're no longer dealing with the health effects of COVID, but we are really still dealing with the educational effects of kids not having been in an early care environment for a very long time. Reduced access to early care now could really impact that future school performance. And it's also going to change parents' ability to return to work if we aren't able to get childcare providers back up and running. So that's something we need to be prioritizing today.
Anything else as we wrap up this conversation? Anything else that folks ought to know about the numbers or anywhere they can go to get more information?
Sure. So you can go to ncchild.org/datacards for more information on your county or to see the statewide figure and data notes and sources. And I'm happy to answer any questions that folks have. And my contact information is at the bottom of each county card, so that we can dig deeper into what's going on in your county and get your questions answered.
Again, ncchild.org for more information on the county data cards and work that's ongoing to help kids in North Carolina across the state. Whitney Tucker, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Have a great day.